Hi, this is Yola, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. Only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room today for our 600th episode is a singer-songwriter who's currently in the middle of a tour promoting her stellar sophomore album, Stand For Myself. Please welcome Yola. Hello, Yola.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
You are welcome. I'm in Los Angeles. Where are you right now?
I am based in Nashville, Tennessee.
All right, perfect. So you're there right now because I know you're in the middle of a tour. You got some shows in a couple days.
Yes, I do. And I am at home at the moment. Yes, in Nashville. We leave tomorrow night and to get back out on the road. So yeah, no rest for the wicked.
And this is you have dates booked through, I think, April 2022. So you're full on into the touring.
I really am. It's actually quite insane. And also a privilege I recognize, like opening for Chris Stapleton, as I have been. Obviously, he's such this gargantuan artist right. With this gargantuan voice, you know, and to be able to be in that space and to tour on that level, you know, is just such a privilege. Really, you're really able to function in these times where they're able to take all of the precautions needed to keep everyone safe. And if anything happens, you know, we can be cool. We can still have enough separation because the venues are big enough. Changes everything.
And last month, you actually had COVID. Is that true?
Yeah, I did. I had COVID. And again, because of the large venue and the ability to separate, like we didn't even get off our bus to go and do the thing. I think we were supposed to go to a festival, but because of all the protocols, we caught it. And so no one got it off us. We just turned around and went home and took our time getting ready. Yes, we had to cancel a couple shows, but the upside was that we were just able to do what we need to do because we were taking the protocol. And so there's a real benefit to being able to tour in a big tour and to be able to, you know, take all of those protocols to make sure that we shut everything down early doors. It's really meant that we can actually do all of these dates and actually be touring.
And currently, Yola, you're feeling 100%. You're feeling good.
Yeah, well, it was just a blessing. The thing was, when you're vaccinated and you get it, it's quite mild. Right. So you're really, it's like a technicality just waiting for it to be over. So like you're not technically, you know, contagious anymore. And then you've got these absolutely stonking antibodies, which now everyone's kind of half envious of me for. They're just like, before the booster was like a thing that was going around, and was like, oh, great. Now you've got like the super antibodies. I'm like, yeah, like I kind of can't get it now for a bit. It's like, you know, a couple months of, you know, good and free times. But like, I realized how privileged I am to be able to be vaccinated. So many people don't have access to it, you know?
Right. Well, we're happy you're vaccinated. We're happy you're feeling well. I have a kind of a fun question to start with. I'm sure you know already that this past Saturday, Brandi Carlile wore a Yola t-shirt on Saturday Night Live. Here's my question. When you're on Saturday Night Live, whose t-shirt are you going to wear?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'll probably wear Alison Russell t-shirt. I really, really love her as an artist and as a human being. Her album's really super stellar, and I think people should hear it. And so I probably wear an Alison Russell t-shirt.
All right. Perfect. I actually love the t-shirt that is for sale on your website, Genre Fluid, because your music covers a little bit of everything. Like, you cannot pigeonhole Yola music. No way.
No. And like, but you can hear, I think I also wear my influences on my sleeve.
Sure.
So it's my influences come from a broad church. And this is like often what I say about what I see as, well, how I define genre fluidity is that I'm not in no one's club. I'm in everyone's club. And so people are like, so you're on a rock podcast. What are your rock credentials? And I'm like, well, I grew up on Queen. FYI. Freddie played a big role in my life. Tina played a very big role in my life. And if there's anyone that I think should be held aloft as a rock and roll pioneer, certainly with a good, when it comes to singing and, you know, artistry, Tina played a big role for me. Obviously, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, being the creator of all of this stuff, we can't. I'm playing her in the Baz Luhrmann movie about Elvis, and like she played a big role in my understanding of Black women in rock and roll, and still does. But from a young age, I knew her from my teens, and so I feel as though that I've been brought up with, and you know, just brought up in this culture of just being aware of people that look like me in rock and roll.
Right.
And obviously I'm a Brit, so Stones, Beatles, Kinks, you name it, all of that stuff plays big kind of roles in my perception of how I see music. And so people go, there's something in your music that we can't put our fingers on. And it's like, yeah, because I'm a British rocker.
So you have been cast in the Baz Luhrmann movie, and mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, you're full on in with the making of videos, and you are just so natural and comfortable in front of the camera. Where does that confidence come from?
Well, I think this is part of the whole legacy. Like I grew up in the 90s, and hip hop and R&B was massive. And most people that looked like me were into that, which I was as well. But I was also into Nirvana, and I was also into Soundgarden, and I was into loads of British bands like Skunk Anansie and stuff like that. And like always been a big lover and a fan of Skin as an artist, as singer, as writer. And so like I grew up in this environment where like I felt that I could across from looking at the luminaries in America that gave birth to rock and roll, and like my connection to, I suppose, rock and roll from America, and how that kind of spoke to rock and roll in the UK and that transatlantic conversation. Like I felt really like a connected to that, mm-hmm. Emotionally, from the Stones' Muddy Waters connection to like Hendrix visiting the UK, to Sister Rosetta Tharpe visiting the UK and doing those famous, you know, shows in the train stations in Manchester. Like I felt as though I felt part of the story. And so it gives you this sense of confidence to keep on telling the story of how these things speak to you. Like you need a lot less confidence foundationally when it's speaking to you. You just can't help it.
Yeah, it's funny how music ping-pongs across the Atlantic, because the British,
it really does.
The British invasion was influenced by our blues artists. And then, yes. You know, the rock and roll from here is influenced by the British invasion. So it just keeps going back and forth. And But I'm glad you're here in the States with us. We'll take you.
Yeah. I love it. I honestly, I've been living here for a short amount of time. I moved here early 2020 and I'm just absolutely adoring it. And the thing that I'm feeling is the other side of that ping pong match. Uh-huh. And it's really fun. And I just want to keep it going. I don't want us to ever stop talking. I want Brits and Americans to carry on playing tennis across the Atlantic. Just keep on developing this thing we love called rock and roll, you know?
Absolutely. So the new album, Stand For Myself, released this year, produced mm-hmm. produced by Dan Auerbach from the Black Keys. He's produced your last two albums. How do you hook up with Dan?
Well, I was playing at this festival, this conference called Americana Fest, and you do a lot of showcasing around Nashville. And I was showcasing and someone took a video and was like, I know someone that's gonna like this. And so a video gets sent via a few people to Dan and they're like, we sent this to you because everyone's talking about her in Nashville right now. So you just need to know. And so yeah, that kind of led to us having a conversation on the phone and then planning to come for me to travel back to the States because I was still living in the UK at the time to write. And we didn't meet until we wrote one of the first songs on my first album. So it was we were just straight in, hit the ground running kind of thing, you know. But we talked about the music we had in common, and I think that inexorably led to the making of Stand For Myself, because we were talking about the things that we love in soul music, the things that we love in rock and roll music, the things that we love in roots music and across country Americana, you know, everything. And so, yeah, that's kind of what gave birth to it, was just that meeting and just having this conversation about what our passions were in music, you know. And yeah, then that's kind of, that felt like a more point of inspiration for me, just that conversation starting out on this journey.
Yola, when you're writing with someone, are you responsible 100% for the lyrics?
A lot of the time it changes, but mm-hmm. a lot of the time, it's never really an 100% thing. Because for me, I'm a person that is I always have a first chorus. I always have a first verse and a chorus. And I have a piecemeal second verse that I always want someone to throw in some lines. I'm like, I'm saying this. And they go, yeah, you're pretty much all there. should we just twist that around here? So a perfect example would be the song Stand For Myself. Really influenced by not just the Parliament Funkadelic kind of side of the rockier side of that outfit, but also just psychedelic rock generally. And I wanted it to have all of the things that I love from the era in the 70s where rock got really psych and really started communing with funk and communing with jazz and communing with soul music. And that's always been my passion, is taking a song or taking an idea and having it commune with something. So yeah, it starts out as a pretty heavy rocking song, and I put a few kind of weird elements into it, but that was something that I got the most of when I was in maybe 2018, before we started writing the first record, I was with a friend in London, and I've got this song that's keeping me up and it's doing my head in. And so she helps me get it out of my head, which is normally what I need. Like, I've sung it into my phone, into voice notes, and then I've just got to try and unpack what that is. And so a lot of the lyrics for, like, that song, for example, came from that time when I was just with my friend in London, trying to get it out of my head. And then I'll take it into the studio and I'll be like, right, okay, so I've got something. Play them the demo. And they're like, okay, this is fire. And what do you need? I'm like, I need arrangement. Like, it's just completely progressive. There's no structure to it whatsoever. I need arrangement. I need you to help me tweak some of these lyrics in the second verse, because I will always have a verse first. Trust me, you'll never need to tweak my first verse. But I will need, like, if you want a third verse, if you want, like, maybe a bridge from me, I'm the slowest to that. And so I always need a finisher. That's really, like, my vibe. Like, I'll get you most of the way there. Sometimes I'll finish something myself, but, like, I always need a finisher. That's me.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Hey, Rock Solid listeners, it's Pat Francis, and I'm here to tell you that we are stepping up our audio game with the new Shure MV7 podcast microphone. Now, look, if you want to get the best audio out of your Zoom interviews, and I know you do, then you need to buy the MV7. It's perfect for podcasting, home recording, and gaming. It plugs right into the USB of your PC or your Mac, and it's ready to go. So take your sound to the next level with the Shure MV7 podcast microphone. You know what? I'm using it right now.
Now back to the show.
I just want to add that one of my favorite songs on the new album is Dancing Away in Tears. Has such a cool 70s disco type groove to it, and it's just fantastic.
Oh, again, like a real gift to have such, like, a song of that quality as well, that tells the other side of the story. And again, in the 70s, it felt like a lot of genres were talking to each other,
right?
Like, I really love that era for how, like, you know, it wasn't just this band only does this. Like, the Bee Gees came from classic rock and with, like, to whom it may concern and Run to Me and all that business, you know?
Yeah.
And then straight into disco, like Anwar. And even Dolly sounded like disco-y in that time. And so it's like everyone was, like, moving around and, like genres were communing with each other. And I think I'm really fascinated with rock of that era. And I think that's when I got into Queen, the era that I got into Queen first was like 70s Queen. And just the arrangements, obviously the vocals, Freddie is just like the absolute god of all gods he was, you know.
Absolutely.
You can't fight that. Anyone that wants to come at me on that can just jog on, mate.
No. Whenever people say, oh, if you could go back in time and see one performer live, I mean, Freddie Mercury is always at the top of the list for things like that.
Imagine being at Live Aid and that crowd. Oh, God, just, what would you do?
You know what I love so far, Yola, is you are saying artists, you're saying Freddie and Dolly and Tina, and we don't even need to know those last names. We all know who those people are. And look,
and Elton.
And look, and hey, Yola, come on.
Hey.
There's a one name.
Is that right?
Yeah. So speaking of Elton, you do a cover of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Yes.
And Elton John loves your version.
When are you gonna come down? When are you going to land? I should have stayed on the farm. I should have listened to my old man. You cannot hold me forever. I didn't sign up with you. I'm not a present for your friends to open. This girl's too young to be singing.
I mean, when Elton John sings your praises, how does that make you feel?
Like crying? He also, you know me and Brandy Carlile are tight, right? And,
right, I do know that. I do know.
And so, like, it's my birthday on July 31st anyway. I get a voice call, like, in, I think, like, in the morning of the 1st. Obviously, I've got a hangover. And I just pick up the phone, and it's Brandy and Elton singing happy birthday to
me. Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. That doesn't happen in normal people's lives.
Doesn't happen. No.
And so, yeah, I was such a dork. Like, I wish I'd been cool and that I'd been like, oh, hey, and then said something really witty. But I was just weakened. But, like, it means so much. Yeah. Like, he shared my version of his song over all of his socials, and then we did Rocket Hour, and, like, he's just been so behind everything. It's been really just profoundly meaningful, because when I was 4, I was singing his songs.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, really raised me, you know, and his contribution to rock and roll is considerable and meaningful to me as a Brit, you know. I really found it hard to control myself or to be cool or to be any of that. I just kind of stared at him like a freaking idiot.
Well, here's what I'm going to say about that. Continue to be a dork and continue to feel that way, because once that stuff doesn't make you feel anything, I don't think that's good. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think you should always feel blown away by these other artists.
Yeah. I think, like, being desensitized to these things is a real loss.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't really want to get to a point where, like, I'm just like, oh, all these, like, I understand that you can transition to a place where you see the humanity in everyone and you don't make them feel like a freaking alien. And that is, but to then somehow manage to garner and keep a part of your heart that is still the child that danced to, you know, Rocket Man in the living room and, you know, and sang, really, like, just so loud annoying your mother, and like and just keep that part, that child who is like, do you remember those memories, and what would that child say now? And yes, still treat this person like a human. Don't make them like an alien from outer space, because frankly no one really likes that. So to get over that hump is an important hump to be able to get over, but to somehow guard the child within, you know, protect them, value them, hold them aloft.
And then when a fan comes up to you after the show and they're freaking out and nerdy and being a dork, you'll understand it. You'll understand what that's like. And that'll make you that much more approachable. That's what I feel.
Yeah, it's one of those. I think that's how it works. I've actually worked against myself in this regard, in that, like, and I say against as in I've been too much in that direction. I remember doing a show here in Nashville before I'd moved here at all. And like we have a big park, I think it's called Centennial Park in downtown Nashville. And it is a sizable park, you know, and the queue was like almost the whole circumference of the park. I must have done thousands of signatures and photos.
Wow.
And dedications, all this kind of business over a signing period that was supposed to be, I don't know, 15 minutes, half an hour, and turned out to be like 3 hours plus. And I was literally going through people like maybe like 10 seconds per person,
yeah,
continually for 3 hours, no break. And at that point, they were like, yeah, you're too personable, Yola. Stop you from doing this now, because I was also damaging my voice because I wasn't doing any warm down. It was all dreadful for my body and everything. And everyone wants me to carry on doing songs and writing and do all the stuff. I'm like, well, I'm probably going to have to take my care of myself to be able to do that. So I really had to kind of make myself like less of there for everybody in all this business. But, you know, like, I did love it. I'm a people person at heart. And so it's, you know, like I do feel that and understand it and have a great sympathy for that kind of, that sense of just connecting with music and with artists in that way. And my team now protect me from myself.
Gotcha. Another one of my favorite songs is Whatever You Want.
Mm.
And the lyric, those days are gone forever when I gave you whatever you want. Lyrics autobiographical, or do you write sometimes as a character?
No, it's all me. Sorry, it's all me. I love to start. I could be trying to be mysterious. I'm not really mysterious because I've never really, that's not who I am. Like, I'm an open book. It's me. It's my life. That's what it was. Bowing on and curtsying to the authorita, excuse my South Park references, but it's a big part. But the authorita of endless people that weren't me, that were just, they had a plan for me sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I don't have my own agency or like a plan for myself. All I'm doing is sitting here and waiting for you to have a plan for me. And it involves me obeying your every word. And that was so much of my life. It was just too much of my life. Another one I wrote in 2018, by and large, and I played it out for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I always felt like there needed to be a bridge or something in it, but like it felt like quite complete as it was without the bridge. And so I played it out for a while and then I took it in going, I feel like there's something that I need to kind of like tweak in this. Did a bit of tweak in the second verse. First verse is perfect, business as usual, Yola. Chorus is perfect, business as usual, Yola. A bit of give me a bridge, give me the second half of the second verse, Bob's your uncle, we're home and dry. And but it was so much, again, I was actually referencing melodically Britpop and like Stone Roses and Blur in the melody, because people are like, there's something about that melody. And I know it ain't enough. And they're like, there's something different about that. I'm like, it's very Brit poppy melody. And they're like, oh shit, yeah. Because of the kind of, because again, British rock strikes again, you know?
Well, it's amazing. It's an amazing song. From what I'm gathering now is that you are 100% in charge of your own destiny.
I have to be.
Yeah.
Because it's my life.
Right.
I don't want to be in charge of anyone else's life. Just my own. I don't. And that in itself seems so like almost obvious and almost trite to say.
Right.
But like, for real, like some people might not want you to have control over your own life. And if you just say that to any human, they'll be like, that seems preposterous. It seems ridiculous to like, to not have control over your own life.
Right. Yeah, it does. But
how is that a thing? But for a lot of people, sometimes that's not a thing. And I realize that's a privilege to be able to say that, yeah, I'm going to follow my own path. And the only reason I do that is the music. Like, right. What I have to contend with is that is a world that is still coming to terms and grappling with Black women's involvement in rock and roll. Like, right. We're still, like, was it 2017 or whatever it was that Sister Rosetta Tharpe gets inducted into the Hall of Fame of the genre she created?
Yeah.
Like,
ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And so, like, I have to walk my path for it to really reflect the things that have fed into my life. Because if I walk someone else's path, it might be inaccurate. It might be the kind of the same path that inducts Sister Rosetta Tharpe decades way later than she should have been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And so I have to kind of find what is most authentic to me. And what that is going to be is me being a product of environment, being a Brit, growing up in very ungenred radio environment, you know, and
right.
And everything influencing everything else and being part of that conversation, like witnessing that conversation across the Atlantic and being very aware of it and influenced by it, you know, like I can't take myself out of that conversation. And I think it's when I do, I end up adhering to a trope of some kind, like something that doesn't talk about the way that it was growing up in that era in the UK, and that we got Nirvana the same time as we got Tribe Called Quest.
Right.
And we were all into that stuff equally, you know, like it might not have been all influence, like what you're doing, but everything speaks to everything else. And, you know, as much as you might go, oh, they don't seem like worlds that are connected, but then, like, you know, you've got Run DMC and frickin' Aerosmith kind of fully involved.
Right.
And I've talked to Gary Clark Jr. about, like, just the era and growing up at this time and, you know, like, just what influenced us. And we've got a very similar kind of musical kind of background in that regard. And this is when we were doing Music Cares at the Grammys in 2020, honouring Aerosmith. And we were just talking about that whole era and how, like, important it was that genres keep speaking to each other, especially for rock and roll, because rock and roll's got so much depth to it. It's made of so much stuff and it's so combinable with so much stuff. It's a horrible thing to cheat it and make it, like, just for one type of person. And so, yeah, like, I have to follow my path to keep that story true.
And I feel like success happening for you at the age you are now is much better than if it would have happened to you as a teenager or someone in their early 20s.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah.
Because you know why.
Right.
You know why you want what you want. You don't just want something for the sake of wanting it. You know exactly why. You've traversed all the things in the wrong way.
Right.
All what you don't want, basically. Right.
And then the big machine isn't manipulating you either. Because
that
maturity.
That would have been dangerous.
Yeah.
It was for that sense of self and identity. And you see people come out of the machine not knowing who they are anymore.
Exactly.
And that's what's really valuable. And I think being able to tell, like, a deeper story, especially, again, like, it aligning with my part in this movie, like, it's very clear that I want to be talking about, you know, our relationship as Black women to the guitar and, like, our foundational role in the, not just the creation, but the innovation of rock and roll. And talk about legends like Betty Davis and people that you can't always get footage of because people weren't filming these people. Because
right.
they were creating stuff and influencing all these people. And then, you know, but not given the focus of everything that they created. And so, yeah, I have to do that and I have to be visible, you know, like, it's my duty to be visible whilst playing the guitar, like, you know, and speaking on my influences and all of the things that have inspired me from people of all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of, you know, denomination of, you know, sexuality, and like how all of that, you know, all of those things have played into, you know, the richness of rock and roll. It's just not like a strictly cis white male
right
environment, even though it may present as that sometimes. Like, you know, we can't extricate Black people from the story of rock and roll. I can't extricate the role of women in rock and roll, and I'm both of those things.
Yeah, because we need people like you to give this a face, so that we're not always seeing just the white males, of which I am one. But I want to see different stuff.
Yeah, and Yola, we love it all.
Yola, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I love your singing voice, and now I love your speaking voice. They gave me a half hour, so I don't want to go over my time. But I do want to tell people that they have to seek out your performance on Austin City Limits, because it was phenomenal.
Thank you.
And for all things about Yola, her website, iamyola.com, Twitter at iamyola, and Instagram at iamyolaofficial. And yeah, my last question for you is, what's next for Yola? I mean, what do you have another goal that you want to reach? Do you want to do a James Bond song? What do you want to do?
Wow. Oh gosh. People have actually, like, the James Bond thing has been something that's like, hey, do you want to do that? I'm like, that would be fun. For sure.
Yes, it would.
I'm heading back out on the road with Chris Stapleton to do some more Enorma Domes, including, we just did Madison Square Garden. Yeah, that was a real big deal.
Sure.
That was emotionally a real moment for me. And we're playing the Bridgestone here in Nashville as well. That's been rescheduled to December, I believe. Yeah, we've got all sorts of shows coming up. We're working on some little surprises in the offing of new content from me, none of which I can talk about.
All right.
I can please. and yeah. That seems to be the mainstay of the situation.
Okay. Well, yeah. I want to say, hopefully hopefully you come back to Los Angeles soon, so I can come to the show and maybe say hello in person.
Yes.
And in conjunction with this episode, I'm going to be giving away one CD copy and one vinyl copy of Stand For Myself.
Yes. And
my last thing for you, Yola, is, we need a play out song. So which song from the new album would you like me to use to play out the episode?
It's got to be the title track of the whole gosh darn album. It's got to be Stand For Myself.
That's all right.
That's my rock song.
All right. You got it. Thank you so much, Yola. Stay safe out there. And we look forward to more stuff from Yola. Take care.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, bye.